everybody. Welcome to the second episode of the Seahawks Collective Podcast. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me at Hawk Blogger all over the place. I am joined this week by Rob Staton at Rob Staton and Michael Sean Dugar at Mike Dugar. We have one more week until we get our fourth. So we'll get the nice quad box going. Annabelle Hasselback will join, take over, and be the professional host that we all need. I will fill in for one more week, and then we'll get that that full crew going. So looking forward to that. Hopefully Annabelle is enjoying her summer. And, you know, look, Mike and I just came from the Seahawks second padded practice where there's not one, but at least a couple of scuffles. I'm going to see if we can instigate a couple scuffles tonight but between this crew. We'll see what comes of it. Rob, how are you doing today, man?
Really good, thanks. And looking forward to hearing about these scuffles that you're talking about here, Brian. You know, this is when camp really gets going, isn't it, when the pads are on. So I'm interested to know who's been fighting who and whether this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, Mike, first of all, how you doing today? Still down there at the VMAC?
Yeah, I'm here now watching the grounds crew do their thing. This is cool. I like when I get to do stuff from the VMAT. It feels like more professional. Like, oh, hey, I'm on site. You know, I'm a writer, so I don't do a lot of like, oh, I'm reporting live from insert site here. So it's cool to knock that off every once in a while.
It is. And it's actually kind of fun to see what all that goes on just to make a practice possible every day. Like the grounds crew, what they do, all the folks getting all the equipment everywhere. Like it's a pretty impressive production, just an NFL practice, let alone a game.
Yeah, no, it's cool to kind of see how the sausage is made, so to speak. And these guys are out here so early too. Like if you ever come, like as soon as they open the practice gates, you know, for the media to come in, it's like, oh my goodness, you guys are here at like 9 for practice that starts at like 1. Jesus. Yeah, kudos to them.
Yeah. So speaking of which, let's give Rob exactly what he asked for. Mike, what did you see in practice today where it got we had at least a couple little, you know, little scuffles?
Were those in the one-on-ones with the linemen?
Well, so you talk about that one. I'll talk about the one I saw a little bit later.
Hold on. I saw – the only one I saw today, I saw Arroyo and Eamon Worry get into it. Like, they both lost their helmets briefly, which I like to see. I'm always curious about the rookies. Actually, in general, I am a very curious person. Like, who's willing to fight? You know, I don't think everyone should be. That's just, it's too much. But I don't think you can have no one. I just got to be some guys who are like, I don't care that we're teammates. It's day 8 or whatever. It's 80 something degrees. I'm upset. I need to punch somebody. And like, that's like unhealthy behavior anywhere else but a football field or a boxing ring, or I guess in hockey as well. But I'm always looking for those guys. So like, I always love when I see it brewing too, which is the case with Arroyo and Nick today. They just kept holding each other after they were blocking each other on like run plays. And it's, you know, how the one guy never wants to let the other guy get the last shove. They kept doing that, did it like 3 times, and eventually it was just like, dude, stop pushing me. Boom, helmets come off. Ended up dapping up after though, which is good. I think last year, or whichever year it was that DK hit his teammate over the head with the helmet, that was last year, right? That's what you don't want. I'm cool with guys just fighting, getting into it. You can swing on somebody if you want, but like swinging your helmet, hitting your teammate in the head, that's too far. But I thought Nick and Elijah kind of got their first showing to us in the media of like, oh, okay, now I'm about that as well, which is always good.
Rob, what do you think about when you hear the 2 second round picks going at it? Is there one guy that you're a little more surprised to hear about than the other?
No, I just freaking love it. You know, it's fantastic. You know, if I was a rookie, I can only speak for myself, I'd probably be on my best behavior. You know, go in there, not really try not to do anything wrong, not try and rock the boat or anything like that. So the fact that the two guys are in there and they're saying, screw that, I'm going to go and have a fight with the other guy who was drafted in round 2. I love it. It speaks to both of them. You know, you want to see a bit of an edge on this team. I think at times that's been a little bit lacking in recent years. So if the 2 second round rookies are going to go and bring that, and maybe we can see Gray Zabel doing something similar in the next few days, then that's all good for me. It's a good sign if the rookies are getting involved.
Yeah, the guy that has been involved with pretty much every testy play, I would say, so far this training camp, has been Anthony Bradford. And they were doing 1v1s. Today it was 2v2 pass rush drills. And it was him and actually, I just was looking at my notes on this. It was him and Abe Lucas going against Jared Ivey and another guy that I can't remember. And Anthony Bradford shoved Jared Ivey to the ground. Clean play, but physical. Jared Ivey didn't like it. He got up and he kind of shoved Anthony Bradford in the back. Anthony Bradford turned around, threw a punch. Everyone, both sides came in. There was a couple more punches that got thrown. Then they separated out pretty quickly. And I got to throw this out for you guys. Because I'm really curious. The right guard position is going to be, most positive way I could say it, a fascinating battle, going into the season. And right now, if I'm the Seahawks coaching staff, I think I would take the edge that Anthony Bradford brings and the run blocking that Anthony Bradford brings, even though he is still a serious problem as a pass protector, versus Christian Haynes, who I'm seeing getting pushed around everywhere, or Jalen Sundell, who maybe is okay at everything. Rob, when I kind of describe those three options, is there one of those that is more appealing to you?
Well, the one thing I said on a stream I did on Sunday was if you have five right guards, you've probably got none. And it does seem as if the Seahawks are looking at the guys that they've got and trying to find somebody who fits there, and no one's really put their hand up. And that is a little bit concerning. It's probably the one thing that I've seen you guys maybe referencing, and I've heard it on the radio. Curtis Allen, who's been out at training camp and does some blogging for us as well, he's been saying the same things. And he even said in his piece today that it kind of reminds him a little bit of when they went into last season at center with Nick Harris and Oluwatimi, and it was pretty clear that there was not a solution there to start the season. And then they went and signed another center in August. And he was wondering whether or not something similar is happening here. And they may be going to have to look at what's available on the veteran market and go and get somebody else in here. So I think it is a little bit concerning on Anthony Bradford. I'm intrigued by him. I know what you're saying about the pass protection. He's obviously never been a consistent player. He's not put it together, but he was such a good athlete at the combine. You know, he ran a 5.08 at 332 pounds. His 10-yard split was better than Charles Cross's. He was only slightly slower than Jason Peters and Trent Williams, so he can move for his size. And yet, when you've watched him play, you've not really seen much evidence of that. So he has got some upside. If his run blocking is showing well at training camp, I would be tempted to give him a try. But then I suppose you could easily argue if they feel that Jalen Sundell's the best scheme fit, and this is a system that has relied on physical prototypes rather than necessarily who's the best athlete or who's the best run blocker, then maybe they're going to go in that direction instead. But it's hardly encouraging, isn't it, that they seem to have solved one issue at left guard and now there's this developing problem at right guard.
What do you see there, Mike?
Well, I see what is a predictable dilemma here. Like, we could have had this talk 4 months ago, and we're like, wow, they should do something at right guard, you know? And that's where I think I look at more. The players should perform well, of course, but like, that's where I kind of throw it up to the front office, you know, because sometimes they have an issue where the process was sound and they just caught bad luck. I think like right tackle last year was like a good example. They made like investments and then guys kept getting hurt, and it was like, well, now you have to start Mike Jarrell. You don't want to have to do that, but he was like their fourth guy, you know? So I'm not like blaming John for that. He did the right process. But in this case, like, we sit here for months and months and months, you don't do anything at right guard, and you get to camp, and it's like Rob said, who the hell is going to play right guard? It feels like they're one more experiment away from asking Abe to go out there and try it, you know? And I do think my other issue with AB, besides the pass blocking thing, is I think last year he had a lot of penalties too, and that honestly is way more of a problem for me, because then it's just inexcusable. I think he was the guy, I think him and Jarrell wiped out maybe like 80 yards of Jackson Smith and Jigba receptions in that Rams game. Like, JSN should have had a Rose Bowl type game in the loss to the Rams in overtime at home. And instead it was holding here, false start there, whatever, you know. And those are the guys for me I just can't play. Most guards, if you're taking in rounds like 3 through 7, you probably aren't very good at one of the other, like run blocking or pass blocking, which is why you fell typically, which I can live with. We'll have to coach you up. That makes sense. But it's like, dude, if you're wiping away a 16 yard gain on 3rd and 11, then I just can't play you no matter what your strength or weaknesses is. So that's why I lean, I think, a little bit more towards Haynes right now. To my sleeper, though, I could see a world where maybe you just play Jalen and Olu. Jalen at center and then Olua at right guard, because I think Olua
Oh,
is a
really?
really, really good pass protector. Yeah, if you just want to maximize your pass protection there, because I think Olu is really solid, man. You can see it in the one-on-ones too. Like, he can hold up against Murph and Jareed and Leo. Like, Olu's always been good at that. So I think if push comes to shove and you really want to get your best five out there, Olu might end up being your best right guard.
Why would you go with Olu at right guard instead of Olu at center and Jalen at guard, where he's been playing guard and Olu's been pretty much stable at center?
Because I think that, like I said, it's getting your best five there. And I don't know about, I have to watch Jalen a little bit more at right guard. I think you can maybe hide your center a little better if he's lacking there. I also am not sure. The tricky thing comes with center is there's so much between the ears. Like, today I give you an example. Remember that play Spoon had a he would have sacked Darnold, and Darnold like put it in the dirt. So the line slid the they slid the protection to the left. Because that's where it looked like Jay Love and some other guys are coming from. They all dropped out. Spoon comes from the weak side, boom, wide open. And I remember thinking, I was writing down on my notes, I was like, whose fault is that? I think Olu was the center. I'm like, did Olu put the protection the wrong way? Was that Sam? Without that knowledge, sometimes it can get tricky about who should be the center. Cause like, if that was an Olu thing, like, that's a problem. That was a third down snap. If you did the wrong thing, you just got your quarterback smacked, on a blitz, But I know Olu can block. So I'm like, if you can't get that part consistently of the cerebral thing, I know at the end of the day, I can just throw you over there at right guard and you'll hold up.
Interesting. Like, that would be a surprise. That would definitely be a surprise from my perspective. I don't see Olu's body type as a guard, but I will say you're right. He has done a better job this year of holding up to strength, like power rushes. I think that was something he wasn't showing as much previous years, but I think he's done better. I don't know, man. Haynes has not shown it for me so far. So, Rob, you talked about this potential of, is there a Connor Williams sitting out there that could be coming in at right guard? And sure enough, yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, I can't even remember, so many different shows we've been doing, but Will Hernandez announces on Instagram that he has been medically cleared from his ACL injury, started for the Cardinals last year, was, I don't know if he gave up a sack. I think he maybe did not give up a sack all year. Maybe not a great fit for a wide zone scheme, but certainly seems like he would raise the floor a little bit. Are you biting at all on Will Hernandez?
I think it's really going to come down to what they feel is most important, and whether that is someone who can just execute the scheme at a reasonable level and maybe do what Mike was saying there and just not give the stupid holding penalty away, which takes away a big pass on third down. They don't need somebody who's necessarily going to be elite there. They need someone who can hold down that position. And if they don't think there's anybody on this roster that can do that, they have to go and see what else is out there. Now, Hernandez has played a lot of football, and I suppose in situations like this, you do kind of have to think, will he provide a base level of performance that will allow you just to get through the season and not be a liability? Because it's over the years, it's been having liabilities at key positions on the offensive line, which has cost Seattle. So if he can be competent, I'd be interested, and I'd be interested in any other offensive lineman who can be competent, safe, do what he's supposed to do. But with this scheme, and because what we know about the zone blocking scheme, and they like certain types of player, and they are looking for players to get on the move and get to the second level, can Hernandez do that? If he can't, he's probably not going to work in this system. So I think that's certainly one for the staff to work out. The last thing we all want is to be sat watching a team in week three that can't block on key downs or can't get a yard on third and one. So they've got to work out what's the best way to deliver on that, because we just want a functioning O-line when the game's on the line.
The story from the Seahawks perspective, Mike, is that offensive line room, the coaches, don't necessarily want a vet. They want to have young guys that they're working with, and maybe they've chosen this. Do you buy that? Do you buy that as a reason to do this? Do you think that they should be in the market for even guys like Will Hernandez coming off a pretty serious injury, or should they be working with the young players?
I do think that there is like a world where there's a good starting five front line. And I'm like the biggest pessimist there probably is about the Seahawks O-line in general, I think the last like 10 years of Seahawks football have kind of been, you can boil that down a lot to just like trench play in general. This includes the defensive line and a lot of those years as well. So like I'm the big pessimist, but like I watch this, I'm like, this can work. I really think, like I said, I'm growing on Olu because I think Olu can block really well. Like he was the whatever the center award is in college, like for a
Remington.
reason. Remington, yes, yeah. Like he can do it. It's that the power just doesn't always show up in the run blocking, which is odd. It's usually you get guys like AB, who's like, I can run block and then pass block, and when I have to go backwards, it gets a little tricky. Olu's like the inverse, which I don't think I've seen in my 9 years of doing this, which I guess isn't that long. I think there's a good five though. Like, and you could tell me, like, you can fast forward to the future, and if you tell me, Mike, they're gonna start against the Niners, Charles Gray, Haynes, Olu Lucas, I'm like, you know what? That can probably get it done. Like, there's a world where I'm like, that doesn't stink. And I like saying doesn't stink. Rob said competent. Those are synonymous in this regard because I really feel like if that was just the if that was what the O-line was in the last like 5 6 years, they're like, that's plus two wins, I think, almost every year. It just not stink. That's it. Just because you can go down the list pretty much every year, like, well, if the O-line was just okay, they win insert game here, insert game there. So I'm a little bit higher on just like, all right, you got the guys, go make it work. I do think they can do that. Because like trying to throw someone in, like that can go either way. It can go like the Connor Williams thing, or it can go like the Dwayne Brown thing in 2017, which was a great idea. I think anyone they sign now will probably fall into the Connor category, particularly if you're talking about somebody coming off injury like Hernandez.
I mean, it is the high risk, high reward path. And if they're able to walk this line and come out with a competent or not bad offensive line, whatever description you want, then they'll have one of the youngest competent offensive lines in the game that can grow together and potentially be in a really good spot for the next few years. Rob, if I told you that after 1 week of camp, Mike, who's a self-described pessimist, and me, who is probably the optimist, but also been really critical of the offensive line approach for the last decade, both were saying the offensive line, we can see a path to it being reasonable. What would your expectations be with just that knowledge?
I think that'd be really reassuring to hear you say that, and I've heard what you've been saying, Brian, about that, and it is encouraging. If they can get, as we've been talking about, an offensive line that isn't a liability, that can just do the basics right, they have a defense which is looking terrific. I think there's an every chance based on what you guys are reporting and what everybody's saying, and reading about Nick Amonwori and his interceptions and everything like that, everything's coming together. Derek Hall sounds positive, and the way he's connecting with DeMarcus Lawrence, that defense does sound as if it's primed to take another step. And if they can have a top eight unit on defense, and then you have an offensive line that can do the basics, that will give you a chance to run the football and make some key plays, this is a football team that can win a lot of games. That is what you need. I suppose from a Seahawks perspective, we've just seen so many bad offensive lines over the years until we're actually watching a game of football 6 weeks into a season and go, do you know what? We don't talk that much about the offensive line at the moment. It's probably going to have to be seen to be believed from the Seahawks fan base and everybody else. So I really hope it's true. I'd love nothing more than to be in Seattle in week one, watching that game against the Niners and being able to turn to Robbie Arby with at the game and say, this offensive line is doing pretty well. We're not talking about it. And that would be a huge plus, especially against Nick Bosa. So fingers crossed that's going to be the case.
All right,
You know
Mike.
how you guys know how there's like sorry to cut you off, but you
Yeah,
guys
go
know
ahead. Go
how
ahead.
when there's a regime change, sometimes the new players get asked like, hey, what's new about insert thing? And they say something that just like makes the previous regime look like really bad. That's happening with the Jets right now, if you read quotes from them. But like I was talking to Olu the other day, and I was just like, hey, what's the difference with the staff? Just one of those simple softball questions to just figure out what's new. And he was like, yeah, there's just a lot more clarity now on what we're doing. And he kept talking. And in my whole, I missed the back half of his answer because I was just in my head like, clarity? What the hell? And then when he stopped talking, I said, "Hey, what do you mean by clarity?" He was just like, "Yeah, there's just more rule. It's very clear what the rules are for what we have to do." And he gave a longer answer too. I don't have it right in front of me, but just that just really stood out to me about just how rough things were last year, just from a coaching standpoint. Again, a predictable outcome. You know, you hired an OC who had never coached the NFL and an O-line coach who had never coached the NFL. And what do you know? It wasn't very clear. Their instructions to the players weren't very clear on how they should operate things or problem solve, which I think is the biggest way that experience, the lack of experience shows up in the NFL. You just learn how, you just don't have the problem solving tools in your bag. Like, oh, we're seeing this. How do we fix it? You know, on the fly. You don't get that much time during the week to fix stuff. And it's not surprising that Olu was like, yeah, we just have more clarity on how we're supposed to do things, what the rules are when we encounter this, this, and that. I was like, oh my God. I wanted to ask him, like, are you okay? How bad was last year? You know, he wouldn't say that. He's a, you know, he's a good team guy. He would never say that. And we don't have the type of relationship for me to ask him that.
We but all saw how just, bad it was last year.
Yeah. You know, I was, that just really jumped out as just something simple as like, it's very clear what we have to do, a lot clearer than before. I was like, good God, man. Last year was so rough that I imagine that really just changing the coaches can just get them to a higher baseline. I still don't think you just go from being, let's say they were 28th best O-line last year to like eighth with just adding gray. I think that's just too optimistic. But just being, yeah, just not stinky for most of the year, like just don't be the reason you just lose division games. That would be a nice like barometer right there. We go through all six division games when we're done in week 18 or after the season ends. Like how many times was the O-line the reason they lost one of those six games? Assuming they didn't go, you know, 6-0. That's like the measure because you guys know there's so many games. Remember that losing streak against the Niners was a six in a row. The O-line was like the problem in like all six. It was really, 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 particularly the playoff game 2022. So like, I think I just want to throw that Olu nugget out there because it's been sticking with me since he said it yesterday and just kind of an indication of how rough it probably was for those guys up front last year with that staff.
That's a great one. And I mean, you think about it, what do you need to be good? You need talent. You need repetition, like you need clarity of what you're trying to do. And you need the ability that when something doesn't go as expected, that there's clarity about, okay, how do you adjust? What do you do? What's your kind of counter? And last year, they didn't have pretty much any of that, right? Like, so even if they had clarity on what they were supposed to do, they ran the ball like five times a game. So, you know, being able to get good at that when you don't have clarity on the rules, and I think Mike and I have seen it in practice, the amount of, like, it seems like they have about 10 offensive line coaches. Like, almost everybody has somebody coaching them up, and they're splitting the left side from the right side, and both centers are active at every given time, and they're working. Like, when they don't have fans there, like today, you can really hear like the detail they're going over with each of the linemen and where they want them targeting and where they should be and what the splits should be. It feels a little bit different than maybe a lot bit different than last year. Mike, I'm going to ask you something and then I'm going to come to Rob next on this. If all you had to go on was this first week of training camp and you had to write essentially a preview of what the Seahawks season's going to be, what would be your lead in? What would be your like high level top of your story thesis for what this season would be for the Seahawks?
Mike McDonald has the number one defense, period, capital A again, period. I just the more I watch. And really, I think your point about the days when there's not fans, which have become my favorite of the last couple of years because of what we can hear, and the opportunities we get to, for those who haven't been to camp, they have these two video boards on the side where the media stands. So not only can we see a play, and we're fortunate enough to be on the same side of the defense, we can see a play happen in front of us. Then we can turn and watch on the video board. And if something went wrong or something was good, we can hear the secondary typically come over and be like, oh, man, we had this, that. What was the call here? And walk it through. We just learned so much. And you can see all the little details that are going to make the defense really good. I think Spoon's communication really stands out there. We're not allowed to quote what these guys say, which is why you don't hear about it. We can't write about it. But just for those of us who are there so consistently, you can just see like, oh, this is going to be good because of that word Olu mentioned, the clarity. There's just so much But particularly with the starters, with the backups, it can get a little nasty there because those guys don't know each other as well and they're just not as good. But with the starters, it's very clear, like, oh, wow, the reason I did this, J Love, is because I saw that. And he'll be like, oh, yeah, I saw that too. I'm glad you did that. And they didn't have to tell each other that. Like, that stuff is cash, man. And this is all without Ernest, by the way. Ernest hasn't really been practicing at all. So I think that once they get Ernest back, I already love the front. Just hearing how these guys are going through all the rules and everything, that maybe that's why the Olu comment stood out to me too, because I can hear the clarity on defense. They know we get trips to this and this situation, this split, we're doing that, this and that. There's so much problem solving that they're doing on the fly. And then they got this, you know, this guy Mike McDonald, who's like, he's supposed to be this genius on defense. I believe he is, and I say he did it again in that lead-in, because we saw this with the Ravens. You know, they were good after they got Roquan in the trade, whatever year that was. And in the next full year, that's when they were just world beaters and just whipping everybody's ass. So I, if I had right now just going, that would probably be how I describe the season.
Now, Rob, I know you are not at these practices, but you're about as omnipresent as anyone can be that is not there. So, I mean, obviously that's a pretty positive headline from Mike. What based off everything you've read, would be your first week takeaway about this team?
Well, I think it's absolutely fantastic to hear what Mike said there about the defense, because from what I'm reading, that was kind of the vibe that I was getting from people. Was, you know, I think the fact that Mike said they could be the best defense in the NFL, I've been trying to sort of be restrained on that, because I mean I'm 5,000 miles away, so I'm not seeing any of this stuff, so I can't really pass comment on it. But that's, you know, that is a great target to go for, and that's what Mike McDonald did with the Baltimore defense. You know, they went 28-8 first. He inherited the 28th defense. They were probably about eighth by the end of last year. Can they get to first next year? There are very few holes on that defense right now. Yes, you're looking for somebody who can develop as that top end pass rusher. You know, is there a player on the roster who can do that, who can be that sort of lead dog when it comes to, you know, getting those big sacks on key plays, you know, making sacks on first down, not just on third down when it's in a favorable down and distance. You know, you're looking for that kind of a player, but apart from that, there's not really any holes. You know, the pieces are there to have a great defense. So that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I'm enjoying most, hearing what you guys are talking about, what other people who've been at training camp are talking about. And hopefully, you know, in the coming next couple of weeks, we will begin to get some clarity on that offensive line, and things will be coming together. I think the Seahawks are going to win the NFC West. You know, I think everything's there for them. I think they could be perhaps more competitive than some people think in the NFC. I'm not suggesting they're going to get to the Super Bowl or anything, but I do think they've got a chance to get to the playoffs and be a real pain in the backside to play this season. So I'm optimistic with what you are saying and what I'm reading.
It's fascinating to me because I think the defense certainly has looked really good, and I certainly believe in what Mike McDonald can do. I also still have real question marks about the offense. And the thing that's challenging here is if the defense is truly the number one or even a top five defense, then the bar for how good the offense has to be, you know, it drops, right? Like the bar's not as high. If you're holding people to 15 points a game, you only need to score 16, right? So, and the thing that I can't quite get out of my head is, as good as Mike McDonald has been as a defensive coach, it took him half a year in his first time at Baltimore to kind of get the personnel and get things going. It took him a half a year last year to get his defense kind of the right personnel and get going. How realistic, Mike, is it to expect Clint Kubiak to come in with a new quarterback, a new scheme, new receivers, young offensive line, and for that offense to be good enough to pair with a really good defense and be a playoff team?
Yeah, that's right. I'm with you. I'm skeptical. That's why my headline did not include the offense, because it's just so much wait and see for me. Because it's not like I can't think of an offensive. Actually, yes, I can. It's not like they're hiring Schottenheimer, who, you know, he had proven it when they hired him in 2018 that he could have a really good offense. Like, even with talent that wasn't that great. You know, he did it with the Jets, not as much with the Rams, but like we had seen it. And it's not like you know, sometimes a defensive coordinator who's done it before, when he gets hired, I'm like, oh, he's gonna turn that around. I felt that way when the Eagles hired Fangio. I feel that way about the Niners hiring Saleh. I just trust those guys because they've done it. And Kubiak, I'm not as high on, you know. He's just coming. It's almost like last year, the floor I thought for inside linebacker was so low because I wasn't high on Tyrell or Jerome Baker. So when Ernest came in, Ernest didn't even, he didn't have to be Fred Warner to make it feel like he made such a big difference. And I think that's where Kubiak's kind of benefiting from in the big picture, and that like Grubb was so bad that if Kubiak's just is not bad, it'll feel great. But that's not enough to get you to where you want to be. These guys are Super Bowl or bust in their minds, whether they should be or not is whatever, but they are. And it's like, well, is this guy going to get you there? Because I think the teams that can get there are the teams that can win in the margins on offense, like who can get there on third down or whatever. Like when you get the ball with 2 minutes left, you know that you guys are going to rock and roll. You're going to make all the clutch plays. You're going to make all the tough throws, the tough catches, the win in the obvious passing situations. We've seen some offenses like look really good in the regular season and get to the playoffs and they just fall short there. And sometimes it is those offenses that are predicated on like, all right, we're going to run the ball, make sure we're always in third and manageable. It's like, well, you're not going to be always in third and manageable. There'll be a playoff game or a high leverage week 18, week 17 game where it's like, bro, it's third and seven, you're down six. You can't play action right now. Everybody needs to just buck up and beat the guy in front of them and make it happen. You know, does this offense have enough to do that? I feel like this offense is probably going to remind us a little bit of the Packers with Love. Like their offense is very similarly predicated on like, let's run the ball, play action, like very QB friendly scheme, O-line friendly scheme as well, actually. But like when push comes to shove, they didn't have enough in the passing game to make a run. They just didn't. Now, part of that's because they don't have a number one receiver. But just in general, they just didn't have enough juice. And that was with a great play caller, I think, in LaFleur. So now I'm going back to Kubiak. I'm like, dude, the bar is, if the goal is to just, you know, go to the wild card round and put up a fight, well, yeah, sure. But I don't think that's the goal. Actually, I know that's not the goal. And if it's not, then yeah, I can't help but just be skeptical of what they have on offense. Not just the O-line. I'm talking about the play caller, receivers, and the quarterback.
Yeah, it's interesting, Rob. I have been really wondering about whether they have enough dynamic talent, especially in the passing game on offense. And I started to wonder out loud this morning, do they have like a vertical threat? I know MVS is fast and Torrey Horton's fast, but it feels like this offense is a lot of horizontal boot action, like running crossers, running digs, running like, you know, corners. And like maybe that's just, and you think back to like the 2005 Seahawks. That was not, you know, Joe Jurevicius was not beating anybody deep. Daryl Jackson was not beating anyone deep. Even the 2013 Seahawks, it wasn't like as great of a deep thrower as Russell Wilson's. Doug Baldwin was not like a deep threat necessarily. Golden Tate was a pretty good deep threat. But like, how important do you think it is that the Seahawks develop like a downfield threat as they're trying to figure out this offense?
I actually don't think it's that important at all. And I think that's from watching all of the years of the Shanahan offense. When you watch the Niners, especially when they've beaten Seattle at their best over the years, there was always a play on second and 10 or third and seven or something like that. And it'd just be a slant and you could see it developing right off the snap and you knew exactly what they were going to do and they'd convert it and the Seahawks couldn't stop it. And it was well schemed. The quarterback read his keys and he made a play. And you would often watch the Niners move down the field against Seattle, and it would be passing plays like that. It wouldn't necessarily be the big explosive play downfield. And it just felt like they didn't have an answer to it. I think that that's what the Seahawks are going to try and do. Kubiak has obviously been with Shanahan in the past. They're going to want to run the ball. I think when I look to that Niners offense, when it was at its best, you know, Deebo Samuel did a bit of everything. I mean, an incredible playmaker, and Seattle doesn't really have anybody like that. But he wasn't necessarily running in a straight line like DK Metcalf and taking the top off a defense. And then they would have players like Brandon Ayuk, very good on slants, you know, not necessarily the best deep threat. Juwan Jennings has been an incredible player. He's like a 4-7 runner. You know, he's big, he's slow, but he's very, very controlled, disciplined, makes difficult catches. They've got a tight end, an unbelievable tight end who makes plays in the passing game. I think Elijah Arroyo can do what George Kittle did, not necessarily as a blocker, but as a pass catcher. So I think if you compare it to that kind of a system, and then, of course, the thing that the Niners had was when they were absolutely their best, was Christian McCaffrey running the football and being a threat in the passing game as well. And Deebo Samuel doing a bit of that dual threat thing too. And that's what Seattle's going to need, say, Ken Walker to do next year or Zach Charbonnet. And if they can do all of those things, I think this offense can function. And Valdes-Scantling, for me, you know, can he be like a Paul Richardson type of player who's not somebody who's a constant part of the offense, but someone who can provide that occasional deep threat, who will score the occasional touchdown, make the occasional big play? I think as provided there's somebody who can do that, I don't think you need, let's say, a prototype number one receiver or number two who is just a burner, who is dynamic, who is going to get explosive plays. I think they've got what they need to be a functioning offense, provided the offensive line is not a disaster.
Mike, I see you contemplating. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I've been going back and forth on this particular thing, actually, for the last like couple weeks, because I'm not really sure. So we're in this world of the too high world where everyone's trying to keep a lid on things. And what works, the reason why the scheme works, this one in particular, is because, yeah, you threaten so much underneath, but there usually is someone that you have to respect. Like last year with the Saints, Olave, before his brain went to mush, like he was getting open underneath because he's good, but also because Shaheed is like one of the fastest dudes in the league, it seems like. And I wonder when we get to the place where teams, if they think that you don't have that threat, that your safeties start cheating. And I think that that's where teams like Seattle could get in trouble, because like if they don't respect the MVS to run that like through route, that deep post to pull the safety so Jackson can be underneath the open or can be underneath between the linebackers and the safeties. If they don't respect that, then does this thing work? Does it fall apart? You know, and the safeties can only be cheating so much. Like, it's going to take veteran safeties to really unlock what I'm talking about. Otherwise, you get, like, remember that play with Jamal Adams? I think it was after he was really bad in the Cowboys game. There was a Deebo caught, like, a 60-something yard touchdown on him in the Niners game because he was flat-footed, and he was trying to rob a dig route. But then it was like, oh, Purdy's not going to throw that deep ball to Samuel. Ran right by him. It's like he didn't respect the through route. He was trying to get the underneath route and got caught slipping. Now, he's obviously not a good safety back there, but there are good safeties back there. And if you're just disciplined enough, you know, do the Seahawks have enough to threaten that guy? Because I do think that is important, because you watch all these route combos in practice, almost all of them are someone try to pull, I guess the first team unit, someone try to pull Kobe so we can get this ball between Drake Thomas and the corner. Like, that happens quite a bit. Is this offense dangerous enough where the safeties really respect that? Because if they don't, this is gonna be tough. It's gonna be very tough. Maybe later in the year, because I do think that type of stuff matters. And that's coming from someone like me who's really high on Jackson as a vertical threat. You know, like he had a ball today. Brian, I'm sure you saw it too. Just blew by Josh Joe off the line.
Yep.
Straight up, go ball, third down, cooked. Right, like. Jackson can do that against like starting caliber NFL corners, but I do think you need that threat has to be legit, is basically the long-winded way of the short version of what I'm saying. And that does worry me a little bit, but I think it's one of those things where I may be overthinking it against like every defense that's not elite. But yeah. I do think that'll be a problem against like the elite defenses they face this year.
Yeah, well, there's another way, guys, that you can attack that, because I have certainly the same questions in mind. And that's if you're good enough with the running game that you have to, the defense has to commit more to the run. And the other thing that's interesting, and I want to learn a little bit more about this, but one of the reasons that like a lot of these offenses that choose to utilize a fullback do it is to dictate to the defense that they've got to have three linebackers on the field. And what that does in terms of how it affects the numbers and who they can potentially pass. So this is why I keep coming back to the fact that the run game is absolutely the number one thing. I think more than the defensive performance, more than Sam Darnold, more than like a million other things. I think if they don't get a top 10-ish run game, I think the offense is going to really struggle. Like, I think it's going to have a hard time. I don't know that they've got enough playmakers. And Rob, if I were to tell you, I'll come back to Mike on this. I'm curious, but by his reaction, I'll find out. I think Kenneth Walker is the best player on the offense. Like, that's what I think so far. If that proves to be true, what's your expectation about, like, how much this team will lean on Ken Walker, how much they will run versus pass? How are you kind of imagining this offense come together?
Well, Ken Walker's got all of the talent in the world. I mean, if he stays healthy, I can't remember every name off the top of my head right now, but I can only imagine there's probably Saquon Barkley with as much natural physical talent as Ken Walker in the league. And the problem with Walker is that he just hasn't been able to stay out there. I can remember the game against the Broncos week one last year, before we knew what the offense was going to become under Ryan Grubb. I remember thinking this guy could easily lead the league in rushing yards if they were going to ratchet run the ball. That was a premature thought. Or maybe he could be amongst the leaders because the talent is there and he can make things happen. He can hesitate sometimes and he tends to dance a bit too much in the backfield when he gets caught up, and maybe there's a bit more discipline that he needs to show when he's running the kind of plays he needs to run. But he is just such an incredible player. And look, you saying that he might be the best player in the offense is not a surprise, because on pure talent, you would think that he'd be right up there. It's simply about being able to stay on the field, not getting banged up. And there's no better time for him to stay on the field, play through the pain, make sure he's out there than in a contract year. And I really hope that you're right, Brian. And if the line can block and he can stay healthy, then he's got a great chance to have a massive season.
Mike, do you agree with that statement about Ken Walker being the best player on the offense? And two, if that's true, you know, how good can an offense be if their best player is the running back?
No, I think Jackson's the best player on the offense. And I think that if Ken was the best player, that's bad, because then you get like 2023 Giants type situation, whatever last year Saquon was in New York, where it's just like, oh, you have this guy and he's good, but no one else is as good as him. And he's just running into brick walls. I think that the Raiders could run into a very similar situation where I guess they have Bowers, but it wouldn't surprise me if like Genty is their best player on offense this year. And that's a problem. Like, that just can't be your guy. Like, I think if the Seahawks want to get somewhere, Charles needs to be their best player, or Abe, or even if it's Gray, I don't think it matters that much. Just someone up there, like someone who blocks, you know, that's not Robbie Oates. Like, if Oates is the best player, that's a problem too. I think the reason why I'm higher on Jackson than Ken, because I think that, I don't want to say this without making Ken seem not smart, I just think Jackson processes the game a little better. Like, Ken with the reads is like real shaky, you know, like he does not trust his eyes consistently. Like, there's a lot of, like, you'll see, I'll watch the film. Now I got the benefit of watching like all 22 angle and slow-mo with replays and stuff, but I'll be sitting there looking like, wow, was the run just, did Ken just not hear the call right? Or did everyone block the wrong way? Or, you know, there was just a lot of that. I remember talking to running backs coach Chad Morton about that a lot in the 2022 season. When Ken was really good, it was like, he just needs to trust what he's seeing a lot more. Stop cutting everything back. I think he had a talk with Ken about that in the halftime of the Chiefs game. They ended up losing, but if you guys remember, they came out and Ken ran the ball a lot better in the second half of that Chiefs game. They ended up losing in December because he talked to him like, yo, hey, man, the play is supposed to go here. You are a freak athlete, but every once in a while, my man, just go there. That really helps out our line. You get to cutting stuff back. Guys get holding calls. You got no one to help block you if you get down the field. So I don't think Jackson really has that problem. Like, he did as a rookie. I think he ran the wrong route several noticeable times, at least once in the Thursday night game. He has the one-handed catch against the Niners, another time against the Cardinals, I want to say, in his rookie year as well. I think he stopped doing it as much last year, which helped, having like 1,100 yards. So I think Jackson's upstairs is a lot better. The physical talent, yeah, it's probably about the same. But you be around this league long enough, you realize that everyone's big, strong, fast. You know, and it's not just run 4.3, jump high, whatever. If that's the case, DK would be the best player in the league, right? So, or be the best receiver. It's just as physically talented as anybody. I think Jackson upstairs is the best. But either here nor there, if Ken is the best, that's a problem. That's how you go like 6-11 or something like that with like the 21st best offense or something like that, which is how people start getting fired.
Isn't the point though that if that really that those all of those players could have exceptional seasons? You know, Jackson Smith and Jigba could be amazing, but the offense, if they're trying to run the ball a lot, maybe he's not quite the best player on the offense. Charles Cross could have a great year. Gray Zabel could have a great year. The offensive line could be competent like Raskin, and that might just be enough for Ken Walker to have a really prolific season if he stays healthy. And then the offense is performing at a higher level than perhaps many people expect. Ken Walker is the best player and is producing fantastic results, but the team's still succeeding and a lot of other players are playing well. It's just that maybe Ken's playing especially well. And therefore, you're not just a six-win team. I don't see how Ken Walker being the best player on offense means they're a six-win team. I could easily imagine Seattle having a fantastic offense driven through Ken, combined with a great defense, that helping Sam Darnold, and that being the recipe for maybe a 13-win season.
Yeah, it depends. I can see, like, in the scenario I'm talking about, you end up with an offense kind of like the Falcons last year, where, like, Bijan was really great, and their offensive line was, like, okay. But it was clear, like, Bijan was their best offensive player, and that, like, just didn't get them anywhere. Now, obviously, Kirk was buns, so that factors into that as well. Like, even, like, the Eagles, I don't think their best player on offense was Saquon, you know? So I guess I may have a higher standard, too, for who's the best player. Like, I think it was Lane, you know? I think it was their best offensive player. I do think like it's somewhat the really, really good offenses generally, like even a year where you have like barring a couple of those Derrick Henry Titan seasons, maybe like usually someone up front is whipping ass. If you are like elite, you can be like, okay, like that Falcons offense and have like a skill guy be your best dude. I think like last year they had several 1,000-yard receivers and Bijan went crazy. But like, skill guys being their best players ultimately was part of their issue again with Kirk. Maybe that's not the best example, but you guys get what I'm saying. I hope.
Yeah. It's kind of a fun debate, honestly, because you guys are both convincing for me. I mean, I think about even Christian McCaffrey, people would say he's the offensive player of the year. He was the best player on offense. Not really. Like Trent Williams was their best player.
And look at when he was the best in Carolina, like that year he had 1,000 rushing and 1,000 receiving. That offense, I don't even think was like above average. I think it was 2019 season. He did both of those. It was like offense.
I think though that there's probably different interpretations, because I think Rob and I are thinking about it in one way, which is he could be the most productive or perceived to be the most valuable player. He might not be the best player. Like, because I think for Ken Walker to be the player that Rob's talking about and that I'm imagining, either John Benton or Marshawn Lynch, one of those two has to sit him down and say, look, the same conversation that Tom Cable had with Marshawn Lynch, where Marshawn Lynch, we all know, like nobody doubts how good Marshawn Lynch was, but there was a literal before and after when Tom Cable sat down with him before that Dallas game and said, dude, look, you have got to hit it here at this point. And he was a different player after that. And Marshawn will tell you the same thing. And if John Benton can't convince him, I would hope Marshawn could, you know, because if he does that, and then you've got, I don't know if you saw this today, Mike, the way I did, but I thought Charles Cross and Gray Zabel had a very good day today. Like, I thought the reason the run game looked better today, when I was going back and watching the replays after each play, a lot of them were, it was either Gray Zabel pulling or Gray and Cross leading on the left side. I don't think they're Hutch and Walter Jones over there by any stretch, but it seems like there's a potential for them to be an above average left side of a line.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that when I just turned in my story, that's going to go up on The Athletic today. I kept noting all the big runs were on the left. I'd have to see like the exact schematics of it, but like the touchdown run Helani had earlier in practice was to the left. I think that was with the second team of the line though, but like the first team O-line had a big run in a 10 period. I'm looking at my notes right now. I think it got marked down of like a 10-yard gain, but that's like assuming J Love makes a really good open field tackle on Helani. J Love couldn't do that. That's probably why the ref was like, okay, it's down. But like, there's certainly a world where Helani just takes that to the house if he wins the foot race against Spoon. So like, that was to the left as well. I was kind of noticing that going through my notes today. I was like, oh, the left side, hey, kicking ass a little bit. So yeah, I think that that's not a coincidence. And you know what? They could have a year, like I said, they're not Jones and Hutch, but they could have a year, I think, where it is as simple as like, let's try to just run to the left as often as we can, because that's where we're good. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. I thought the Niners used to spam that a little bit as well, you know, because they had Trent, you know, it's like, let's hit it over here. And I think you got to do that. You kind of see the Lions weaponizing their O-line in that same way. Sometimes they're like, yo, man, Hanay's on it. So whatever we got to do to make him the point of attack on insert run here, we're going to do it. Like, I think that the light bulb might turn on there for Clinton and Benton too, where it's just like, yeah, our right side is cool, but like 76 and 67 are going to lead us to the promised land. So let's just build as much stuff as we can to get them at the point of attack, whether we're pulling, running that way, whatever it may be. So yeah, today I'm with you. They had a good day.
Rob, this gets to me. The last thing we're probably going to talk about, last couple minutes, is quarterback. And the question that everybody had going into this training camp was, how's Sam Darnold going to look? And as we're talking about the 2005 Seahawks, we all talk about Sean Alexander and Walter Jones and you know, Steve Hutchinson. Do you have a recollection of what Matt Hasselbeck's stat line was, what his touchdown interception ratio was, and what his rating was? Because I have it in front of me, I'll tell you, but I'm curious, do you have a feel for what it was?
I mean, I can remember being really amazed by Russell Wilson's quarterback rating, you know, early in his career and how he was sort of around that 100 mark consistently. So I'm guessing Matt Hasselbeck was probably in the low 90s, and then my memory of watching Matt Hasselbeck play was that he was more of a like 25 touchdown, 12, 13 interception type quarterback. So I can't wait to hear what the reality was.
That's a pretty good guess. So he had a 98.2 rating, which is not super high. It's fine. It's good. And he had 24 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. And so like, it does feel like that's the style of quarterback play. Like everyone's like, oh, Sam's gonna have 35 touchdowns again. I'm not sure that this offense is gonna be a 35 touchdown passing offense. But Mike, through the first week, you know, what's your current perspective? Is the arrow pointing up or down on Sam Darnold?
I think the quarterbacks in general are just having a little bit tougher time now that the pads are on. Because this is when the D line's ripping it a little bit more. Because I feel like they're taking it easy on their guys up front on the O line. Because, like, oh, man, I'm not about to hit you with a bunch of spin moves while we're in our draws. You know, I'm not about to do that. But now it's like, oh, it's on. Let's show up. And I think the just anecdotally, it feels like the quarterbacks have played a little worse the last couple of days. Like, there were some good throws today, but even just charting it, there were three picks today as well. One of them, the last one by Jalen Milroe, was because of pressure right in his face right away. But I think overall Sam's doing okay. But I think these last, I'm a arrow down just because the defense is turning up on them in a way that was expected when the pads, you know, came on. Like, the decisions don't seem to be as sharp. Like Jalen's first pick today in 7-on-7, that was the bad throw. You know, AJ Finley just jumped all over it. It was late. Drew Lock's pick today, that Pritchett guy, that was awful. It was an awful decision.
That
It
was a
was
bad
traffic. It was
decision.
across his body. Like, it was an early down too, so you didn't have to force that. It was just awful, you know. And I think that's what happens when the pressure starts to get to you. Like, that's one of my characteristics for quarterbacks is I need you to be good decision maker. I need you to be accurate, and I need you to be tough. That's a very important part. The only thing I really think that's good about this little quarterback show on Netflix is that we get the microphones on when they get hit, and they're showing that. That stuff is painful. It's hard to peel yourself up off the turf and keep making those throws. And so, yes, I expect training camp to be sharp because can't nobody hit you. But even in the instances where the defense is just ramping it up a little bit more, we're seeing guys make mistakes, you know, more mistakes than they were the first couple of days. So, yeah, I think arrow down for the offense in general, arrow up for the defense, which through 6 weeks doesn't feel all that surprising given the offseason that they have.
Rob, if you had to pick one aspect of Sam Darnold's game that has to be, you can only pick one thing to be good this year. You can pick it statistically, you can pick it from an aspect of his game. What do you think is most important that Sam Darnold's good at this year in order to allow the Seahawks offense to be good?
I mean, you just obvious things like third downs and the red zone. I just think that the running games, they are going to try and feature it. And then it is going to be sort of those key moments in a game where, you know, it's not necessarily third and one or two because they're probably going to run the ball. But third and 10, can he extend a drive? Can he play well in the red zone and not turn the ball over? You know, you're quite right. I don't think – I had a look and Jimmy Garoppolo is a different kind of player. I don't think he's as physically talented as Sam Darnold. His most touchdowns in a season under Shanahan was 27. So is that the kind of range, the max range for Sam Darnold in this offense? Maybe it is. I suppose it is also worth noting that in terms of big-time throws, I think Darnold, I'm looking at the list now, he was fourth in the league last year. So that's just behind Lamar Jackson, just ahead of Justin Herbert and Geno. So he has got that within him. Whether that was the system he was in Minnesota and Justin Jefferson, that's always helps when you've got somebody like that. But I think it's an obvious answer. It's the red zone. It's going to be third downs. And he's going to have to be elusive. If the offensive line is not going to be amazing, he's going to have to be able to move around and extend plays. That's a big part of the modern NFL. If Seattle had a sure thing at quarterback, they'd be amongst the Super Bowl favorites with that defense, probably.
Yep.
They don't. They have a question mark. So it's up to Sam Darnold to show, listen, I may never be an elite quarterback, but what I can be is what a serviceable quarterback like Shanahan has had with Purdy and Garoppolo, to the extent that you can help facilitate a Super Bowl run. And if you can do that in the future, then it'll be money well spent. If you can't, you're going to be keeping looking for somebody who can do that job.
All right, last thing is a quick prediction. Quick prediction from both of you. The Seahawks have been mixing it up on the offensive line. Players playing different positions, different units, play by play, let alone day by day. By the time we come back for this show next week, will they have settled in to at least starting five that they're going to start working toward for this first preseason game and going into the season? Rob, I'll start with you. Yes or no, they will have settled on that?
I'm going to say no.
Mike?
Yes, I think it'll be from left to right, Charles, Gray, Olu, Christian, Abe by this time next week.
He's even calling it out. I will join that party and say, yes, I think they will. And I think it's going to be the only, same thing that Mike said. I'm going to go with Jalen Sundell at right guard is my current bet. So that'll be fun. We'll have something to talk about. Rob, anything coming up for you that people should check out on your channel?
No, but Curtis Allen is at training camp, and he's doing some write-ups for us at SeahawksDraftBlog.com. He's doing a great job. I'm going to find some time to do some writing and some scouting this week. So I check out SeahawksDraftBlog.com for that, and Rob Stetton Football for any streams that we do.
And Mike, you've got stuff coming out in The Athletic all the time. Anything people should check out that you've either already written or that's coming out soon?
I'm actually just going to keep plugging my book in this portion of the franchise, the Seattle franchise, Seattle Seahawks, a curated history of the Legion of Boom era, available via pre-order wherever books are sold. Please check that out. Thank you.
It's very cool. It's very cool. Make sure you do check it out. And you guys know you can find all my stuff at Hawk Blogger, daily shows continuing. So we will see you all in the next week at 5 o'clock Pacific time, next Tuesday. Annabelle Hasselbeck will make her debut on the show. We'll have the quad box going, and we will be back with you. Make sure you tell everybody about the Seahawks Collective. Like, subscribe, click the bell to get notified. We will see you all very soon. Until then, take care.